Season 1 of this podcast is sponsored by Muslim Marriage Services, also known as MMS. If you are looking for marriage, then join MMS, your trusted platform for finding a life partner within the Muslim community. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Welcome to Divorce Muslims, a Second Chance podcast. My name is Muhammad and I am your host. In this episode, we are joined by Sister Aisha. Her story is about how the behavior of her husband, such as not willing to work, impacted her marriage. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Aisha. Welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
No worries. So Aisha, give us an introduction of yourself.
So my name is Aisha. I'm 30 years old. I'm from London. I'm a language teacher and a wellness coach.
Statistics suggest that a key cause for divorce in today's day and age is connected to lack of finances. What's your thoughts about this?
I believe that's true. I believe finances are the main causes of relationship breakdown, and I always say that was the main reason of why my marriage ended.
So an issue in your marriage relates to finances, doesn't it? So, tell us your story.
Okay, so my story kind of begins where I was looking to get married. I was newly practicing at the time. I was at university, going on to second year of university. I thought, everyone's looking for me to get married in my families. Why not, look for myself? And I found this matrimonial website called Pure Matrimony. I joined it, and then within a month, I met my ex-husband. At first, when I came across his profile, I didn't think I met his criteria of what he was looking for. He said he wanted an alima. He said he wanted a hafidha, which I wasn't, and he was 6 years older than me. So I was thinking, no, I want someone who's probably my age or a bit older, like a couple of years older. He wasn't from the same city as me, so I was not really open to, speaking to him. So I told him, I don't think we're a match, and I don't meet your criteria. And then he said, oh, okay, well, I think, I think your profile looks really good. He liked the fact that I said things like, I want to seek knowledge and I want to become an Islamic counselor. So those things kind of stood out to him. I saw from his profile that he knew a lot about the religion. We kind of went through our deal breakers list. There was a set of questions on the site. So we went through those, and I just was just open to just speaking to him more. And I think my membership was about to expire, so I gave him my email address so we can continue speaking. So after we exchanged our email addresses, I think we gave each other our phone numbers, and he asked to meet me in person. So he came to see me after 2 weeks of speaking to each other. It was a very short meeting. We met at the train station. I wasn't sure how it would go. It was the first time for me as well, meeting somebody off the site. I wasn't sure of how it would go. I wasn't prepared. I just kind of went to go see him, and he said, he needed to catch his coach again. And so we couldn't really speak for long. So after that meeting, because I thought, because he was very practicing and he seemed to know the religion very well, and I thought he would kind of guide me through and tell me what would be the next step of meeting him, the next steps of taking things forward for marriage. I knew that he was open to speaking to my dad, because we need to involve a wali, or I need to involve my wali at some point. He told me, he was fond of me, he was attracted to me, and he kind of wanted to marry me there, then, there and there, he said.
Whose decision was it for you to marry, you know, your ex-husband?
It was my decision. I felt that he was the right person for me because he knew the religion very well, and I wanted somebody who was practicing. And the way he had came across, like on from his website, and how he articulated himself, and he was attending classes and things like that. So I thought he knows a great deal, so he'll be the right suitor for me.
Overall, how long were you married for?
Overall, I was married for 4.5 years.
And how long has it been since you have been divorced?
It's been 3 years now. We're going to nearly 3 years.
Tell me how it all starts off, the early parts of your marriage, and then what happens after that.
So before we got married, there was a few discussions of how we would live together and things like that. So he said to me that he wants us to have our own place, which I was okay with. Like, I didn't mind too much whether, you know, to live with his family or to live with him, just with him. But we had to live with his family, because he didn't have a job at the time. When we got married, I moved to his family's home. And like within a couple of weeks, we were looking for like properties to move out to. But within that time as well, I didn't expect a lot of things. So how he was in his family's home, he wasn't really talking much to his parents. He was mostly in his room. I just sensed that something wasn't right, like within the first few weeks of us being married together. I mean, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know who I could share this with. I didn't know I could talk to a family member about it. I just thought, you know, now that I'm married, I'll probably just have to keep things private and just keep things between me and him.
So what was it? What was it that you didn't think or didn't feel was right?
With the intimacy aspect, he kind of he's very avoidant. Like at first he seemed like just a normal person, like, you know, he wanted things. But then there was moments when he would tell me to move away from him, not sit close to him. He would make jokes and he would say things very inappropriate, and it sounded very immature. And I would tell him that you can't say things like that, you know, that's hurt my feelings. And then he would just be like, oh, I'm just joking, can't you take a joke? I just noticed that something wasn't right. It just didn't feel very right, but I didn't share that with anybody. I just kept it to myself.
What happens next? And talk us through how it all pans out in the end.
We were living with his family. I was living with my in-laws. Things seemed fine at first. Like, I was happy. They were very supportive. They were kind towards me. I didn't really need to do much. You know, you'd expect when you marry into a South Asian, like when you marry someone from the same background as you. I mean, I'm South Asian, so usually it's like the wife, she would need to be, you know, helping out in the kitchen and with the house chores and stuff like that. But I didn't really need to do that much. My ex-mother-in-law, she was like, you know, she was like, no, you know, you're newly married. So they would often do things in the house, so I didn't need to do much. So like after like 6 months or so, my sister-in-law, she got married. After she left, there was kind of that expectation on me to help my mother-in-law more in the kitchen, which I didn't mind. There was some resentment towards me from my ex-mother-in-law, because she felt that I wasn't, I think she thought that I was not really willing to help her. She would share things probably with my ex-husband. I mean, she'd probably like tell him, like, you know, she needs to do this, she needs to be like this. And he would only share those things that he's discussed with his mom privately whenever we'd have an argument. So whenever we would have an argument, he would tell me, oh, my mom said this about you. And it would be a big shocker to me, because I'll be like, but your mom's so nice to me, and she, like, she never complains. Like, she never, you know, she sounds like, you know, she wouldn't say such a thing. And he would like, oh, you don't know my mom, you know, things like that. And she would say things like, you don't know too much, you're very like clueless, so you don't know how to do things. And you said to me that you know how to cook. Before we got married, you said to me you know how to cook and things. Now you don't know how to do this. And then that wasn't the main issue. The main issue was that he didn't want to do the profession that he was in. He didn't want to get a job in that. So he had a degree. His background was in pharmaceutical science. And he would get pharmaceutical scientist jobs, and he would tell me that, you know, he wasn't interested in that profession anymore. He didn't want to work in that field. He wanted to pursue his Islamic studies. He wanted to study abroad, go to Saudi, become Talib al-Ilm. And he would also encourage me, like he was telling me that I want you to also become a student of knowledge, like very high expectations, which I didn't think I could meet. But then at the same time, I was like a bit optimistic. I was like, okay, I don't mind. So we would go to classes and we would attend an institute that was close by to where he was living, because I wasn't so good with my Arabic. I knew how to read the Quran, like I knew how to read Arabic, but it wasn't to the level or the standard that he could read it at. So he would always tell me that you need to work on this, you need to work on improving your pronunciation. And I told him I don't mind. So I would attend like tajweed classes to improve on my Arabic. Again, it was for him, it wasn't good enough. So there was that aspect of like him wanted me to be at a certain level, level of practicing, and also the aspect of him not wanting to get a job in his field. So he was basically jobless. Like he was okay with the idea of, you know, staying in his family's home until like he got an opportunity to study abroad. Fast forward like 2 years into the marriage. Sorry, not 2 years. Like, I'll say 1 year into the marriage. We had gone on a trip to Malaysia. He found, actually he didn't find it. I found it through a WhatsApp group. We found a place, a markaz, we call it, where you can seek Islamic knowledge. He was all for the idea. He was like, oh yeah, let's go there. We went on like a tourist visa so we could stay there for 3 months. He was like, oh, we'll just, you know, see how it goes. We can learn Arabic there, stuff like that. So his family, his parents, they were supportive of the idea because they knew that he really wanted to become a student of knowledge. And because he wasn't getting the opportunity to study in Saudi because of his age, he needed to be, I think, 22 to be accepted to the Medina University. Because he was over the age, he was 27, he wasn't being accepted. So we found the opportunity in Malaysia, so we both went there. His parents helped him with like the financial side of things. He paid for the tickets and from his savings, and we went. Within like a week or so of being in Malaysia, he didn't like it at all. He didn't feel very comfortable with where we were living. So he was like, okay, we need to move back. You know, I can't live here. I prefer to go Saudi. I prefer to go to a country that's modern. Yeah, we ended up coming back and we were short of money. Like, we literally used our savings for that trip. So that's when I told him that, you know, I would like to get a job. And he was like, oh, you know, what sort of job? And then I told him, like, I don't mind just working in nurseries. I mean, I had a degree and stuff. I could probably, like, go towards the field that I was qualified in. But because he didn't want me to work with the opposite gender, he didn't want me to be in an environment where I had to, like, kind of interact with the opposite sex. So I said to him, like, I can work in nurseries. I worked in nurseries before, and they tend to be, like, more females. there tend to be more female workers. And then I found an Islamic preschool. So I got a job there, and that was quite far from where we were living. So it took about like half an hour to get there by drive. So he would take me to work, and he would like pick me up and drop me off and things. And he would just start complaining, like, he'd be like, why do I have to always take you to work? You know, I have to wake up so early. He didn't have a routine. Like, he would sleep really late. He would often just be on his phone or iPad.
Can I just ask, so you're working in this nursery that's 30 minutes away drive-wise, and 30 minutes back. Was he working at this time?
No, he hadn't got... Yeah, he wasn't working. He was looking for jobs, like, in his field. So he said, oh, I'll look for some jobs as well. But I don't know why he wasn't being offered any interviews. So I got that job, and I was working there. Like, I worked there for like a few months until I found another job, and I had to find another job that was more close by to where we were living at the time, just because of all the complaints that I got from him and how he was getting really frustrated of driving me there and picking me up from there. So yeah, I gave my notice in, and I found another job, working as a teaching assistant in a local school. So that school that I worked in, it was not too far from where we were living, so I could literally walk there. But his parents were like, no, you know, make sure you drive her there, you know, because where we were living, it was very suburban, so there was bus routes, but, you know, it was very different from how, where, it was very different from London, like how, you know, things were here, like easy to commute and stuff. So, so he would be told by his parents, like, he should take me to my workplace and pick me up again, like the same thing. He was not listening to them. He was just like, no, she can go herself, you know, why should I, like, she's old enough and she did this in London, like, it's easy. We'd often argue about these things. It was very petty, and like sometimes the arguments would just go on to us talking about family members. So he would talk about, like, he would all of a sudden just bring up my dad or my mom or my brother, and he would say some really horrible things. Yeah, it's hard for me to remember now, like, some of the things that we would argue about, but it would every other day we'd argue, and it would often be around, like, him needing to take me to work, or him not finding a job yet, him being so picky with some jobs that he would be offered. And what ended up happening was he was trying to find avenues to go abroad and study. And then he told me about this qualification where you can, like, teach English as a second language. And then he was saying that he wants to do it, and he didn't have the money to, like, pay for the course, but I did. So what happened was I said to him, I'll do the course. And then if you want, I can, like, I could pay for his as well. But he said to me, no, wait, I'll wait for, you know, I'll wait to get a job and save, and I don't want to take your money, you know, you do it. I was working part-time as a teaching assistant. I ended up doing the course part-time as well. So he needed to take me again, like, travel, like, take me to the center where I was doing the course. That was quite a commute as well. Again, he didn't like the fact that, you know, he had to pick me up from work and take me there. And, you know, in all our journeys, like, of him driving me there and picking me up, we'd always have an argument about something, and it would be so petty, and it would be about something ridiculous. I can't even remember. And usually he would call me horrible names and, like, criticize my character and criticize, like, how I'm not good at things, or how I'm not good at maths or something, like, something really minor and ridiculous. I ended up qualifying as an EFL teacher. And straightly after that, I got a job in a community center to work as a a tutor, and he also found a job that time. It wasn't in the field that he wanted, but he realized by that time that he needed money, and you know, he needed to do the job. So I was still living with my in-laws. They were like, they're quite supportive, and they were telling us, you know, yeah, you know, make sure you guys save before you move out and things like that. My ex-mother-in-law, she held some resentment towards me because she felt that I wasn't like helping her a lot in the house. Whenever I'd offer to do things, she would tell me like, oh, she'll do it, which didn't make sense because she would complain about me behind my back, but in front of my face, she would be like, you don't need to do this. So yeah, we ended up like moving out, and my ex-mother-in-law, she wasn't happy about that. She ended up saying things like, I made her son bad, and her son wasn't like the way he is. He wasn't really communicating with them a lot, mostly stayed in his room. So she was saying that I'm the cause of that. And then, yeah, she was just not happy, like, when we moved out. So I think I had given my notice in for my job that I was doing at the community center, because he had his job that he was doing. So I didn't feel like I needed the job, but he was like telling me like, I need to work and I need to do something. So I started like looking for new jobs, and I applied to work at some a very reputable language center. Didn't really think I would get the job, but I ended up getting the job. It paid me really well. And then like a few months into my new job, I found out that he's no longer working at his job, at his workplace. I came home one day and I saw him at home, and I came home like early from work, and I saw him at home, and I was just a bit shocked. And I asked him like, what are you doing at home? He was like, oh, I'm not well, I didn't go work. I understood that, but then the next day he wasn't at work again, and then he would tell me not to question him. In a week's time, he was like, oh, I left the job, but like, you know, it's not for me, it's not something I want to do, you know, I'm looking for a new job now. And then I was just telling him, I was like, how am I gonna like manage things on my own? He's like, oh, don't worry, you know, I've got some savings, and yeah, we'll figure it out and stuff, or we'll just move back in with my family. And I told him, I don't want to do that. I don't want to move back in with your family, because, you know, like your mom, she wasn't very happy with how it was, and there's like a lot of tension and stuff. So, and yeah, there was moments when me and his mom argued, and she had like told me some really horrible things as well. So I was saying about that, I was like, you know, I don't want to have any more arguments with her. Like, I just want to keep it as how it is. Our distance and stuff. And then he ended up doing like Uber Eats, you know, just doing that as a job. Yeah, most of our issues were just mainly around money. I think third year into our marriage, like, we were trying for a child, but I wasn't getting pregnant. So he was thinking it's me that I probably had an issue. He was like, oh, maybe you're too stressed, or, you know, every time I had come on, like, on my period, he would always, like, make a statement and say really horrible things. Yeah, there was a moment when he called me something really, like, outrageous and called me barren. Because we were, like, 3 years into the marriage, and he was saying that, you know, why have you not fallen pregnant by now? So I ended up seeing a... see my GP and told them that we were trying. Done a test, and yeah, they said I was fine. Then they said to me that, you know, my husband should do the test. So I went and told him, like, you know, my test results, and like, I'm fine. And they said that, you know, my husband needs to do the test. He was like, no, there's nothing wrong with me. I highly doubt there's anything wrong. And I was like, yeah, I don't doubt that as well. But I just think, you know, it's best to be like on the safe side and, you know, just be clear about things. Like if there's no issues, there's no issues, right? You know, just like continue trying. And some for some people, it could take years. It could, you know, it doesn't matter. Like as long as we know that we're both okay. He didn't want to do the test at the local GP center. So what I ended up doing was I bought an at-home test and I got him to do that. And he did the at-home test and came back negative two times regarding his like sperm count. I was a bit confused and I said to him, like, maybe you need to do the actual test at, you know, by the doctors and see if that's clear as well, or if that's negative or whatever, like they can give us a solution. He again was like not like agreeing. He was like, no, I don't believe I can do this test, you know, it's not right, you know, what if they, like, he was being very paranoid, saying things like, you know, what if they hold on to a sample of my sperm or something. So it took a long time for him to finally agree to do the test. He did the test and, you know, they said, like, there was the test result came back, you know, saying there was no sperm. And then they said to him that he needs to do the test again. So he did the test again after a few months. Again, same result. And then they diagnosed him with a condition called azoospermia. Once I found that out, I was like really shocked and really sad, actually. And I could tell he was upset as well. But he was not willing to talk about it. He was just like, oh, I'm just going to work, you know. And then I was like doing my own research and I was trying to see if I could find like a solution for it, a natural solution. And there were some natural solutions, but you know, it's like the success rate, you know, it's not 100% guaranteed. So I was sharing that information with him, but he wasn't like willing. He was, again, I could tell, it was probably a big shock to him as well. I think like a few months after we found out we needed to move the place that we were staying. Yeah, we moved, found a new place, and that's when things just got really, really bad, because there were some other things that I found out that he was doing behind my back, and I wasn't very happy about it. And I think everything just took a toll on me, like finding out that he had an infertility problem and then how he's treating me, and then also the fact that he wasn't earning enough, and there was a lot for me to deal with financially. At times my parents would call and they'd be like, hey, how's your husband? You know, can we speak to him? And he would always tell me, oh, just tell them that I'm at work, or just tell them I'm busy or something, or I've gone to the mosque. Like, I didn't want my parents to worry, of course, so I didn't want to tell them the truth, I mean.
From this point, what actually goes wrong and how does it lead to divorce?
There was some stuff that I found out that he was doing behind my back that I wasn't happy with. And that's when it led me to feeling completely drained and emotionally and psychologically just really like burnt out, and, you know, physically burnt out and everything. So I told him, you know, it seems like we're not getting along, and, you know, I don't feel like I want to be in this marriage anymore. Whenever I'd want to talk about the issues of the marriage, he would just be avoidant. He would just be like, no, I don't want to talk about it. Or, you know, you want a divorce, go get it yourself. The thing that I found out was that he was seeking another potential spouse. So he was saying that I'm allowed to have another wife, and, you know, it's my right. But then I told him, I was like, but you're not even financially capable. Like, you're not even like taking care of me financially. So how are you going to bring another wife into the picture? And he was just like, oh, you know, this comes from Allah. And he would use those verses and try to get me to, you know, see his perspective. There was a time when, like, he left, like, he was using my laptop, and there were some messages that I came across that really struck me. And I was like questioning him about it. I was like, how can you do this? And, you know, he was like, oh, it's your fault because, you know, you don't meet my needs. You're always at work. And I'm like, how? Like, of course I have to be at work, you know, how are we going to like pay for things? And he would just put the blame on me. And so I just realized it was just taking a toll on me. And I didn't share this with any close family, family and friends, but there was one of my sister-in-laws, she's close to me, and she was like, no, I feel like you're hiding something. I feel like something's not right. And she was saying that my mom even could sense that, you know, that maybe I'm hiding things and that I'm not really happy. And then I think, like, I rarely used to go see my family as well, because I live very far, and he would, you know, tell me, like, you know, I can't always drive you there. So I'll see my family, like, once a year, or sometimes twice a year. And then there was a moment when I was like, oh, no, I really want to see my family. And he was like, okay, well, you can go with the train. So I ended up, like, just going to see my family by myself. When I went to see them, you know, I was happy. They were asking me, you know, like, just normal questions, how's everything, and telling them, like, yeah, things are good. I would never tell them, like, the truth. I would never tell them he doesn't have a job or he's not working in the job that he, you know, he's meant to. And, like, I'm, like, the sole provider. I didn't say these things, like...
And, of course, you didn't tell them that he was seeking a second wife, right?
Yeah, I didn't tell them that either, yeah.
Okay. How did you find out he was looking for a second wife?
It's by coincidence. Like, I wasn't going through his phone or anything. He one time needed to use my laptop for, I think he was needed to log into his email or something to apply for something. He left his email open. He forgot to log out, I mean. So I went on to my laptop, you know, about to do like a lesson plan, and then I see his email, and I see a bunch of, like, you know, like, emails from this website. I think it was called secondwife.com or something, I don't know. And I told him about it straight away, and then what he did was he went on to his email from his phone, and he started deleting all the notification emails that he got. And he was like, oh, there's nothing there. What are you talking about? You know, I'm not looking for a second wife and stuff. And I was like, I read them all. Like, I read all the messages. Like, how can you now deny and say you weren't? I was really upset about it. And he's like, look, you know, you're not meeting my needs. That's why I have to do this. That's why I have to find a second wife. I'm like, but that's not fair for you to say. And so, yeah, in the end, like, I just... I told him, like, you know, you're not being faithful, you're not doing it the right way, and we're not getting along, so, you know, I would like a divorce. When I brought that topic, it was like, oh, you know, do you have any idea if you were divorced how you'd be stained in, you know, in the community? No one would want to marry you after your divorce. You'd be, like, you know, laughed at and stuff. And that would really hurt me, and, you know, it would make me kind of also change my mind about asking for a divorce as well, because I would kind of believe what he'd say, because I know that in our community it's not easy for a divorced person to remarry. I think just before, like, COVID and before lockdown and all that stuff happened, things were, you know, again, you know, things were, like, really rocking the relationship. We were arguing constantly. We'd argue about finances. And this is another thing that I found out, that he was now, instead of him looking for a second wife, now he was talking to women, like, just random women. And again, I found that out by, like, chance. I wasn't even going through his phone. I needed to use his phone once, and I came across some stuff like that. And it just made me lose all trust in him.
What do you mean he was talking to random women?
He was talking to random women from this website again. And it's a different website.
So for marriage purposes, or?
No, so it wasn't for marriage purposes, no.
How did the marriage then end? How did that happen?
I told him, you know, well, is this, you know, like, this is not acceptable. I just told him, I just can't be in this marriage anymore. You have to give me a divorce. He would say things like, go get it yourself. You know, I can't give you a divorce. I will make you suffer. You can say, you know, like, just be very childish and immature with his responses. Whenever I wanted to, you know, talk things through about, you know, the issues, I started doing a bit of research. I came across, I think it was the Sharia Council, and they're based in London. So I called their office and I told them about my situation, and I told them that, you know, I'm having these issues. What can I do about it? Can I get a divorce? Are my reasons valid enough? Yeah, I told them everything, and they ended up just dismissing my case and saying that it's not a very big issue. They were saying, like, you know, these things could be worked through, you know. He's like, you know, have you tried getting a mediator involved? And I said, I tried to speak to local imams and tried to, like, get their advice. But whenever I'd mentioned, you know, getting their help to him, he would say, oh, you know, they won't believe you. It's a man's world. Watch, you know, they won't listen to your story, things like that. And I kind of just believe him. I went to visit my family just before lockdown, and I didn't know there was going to be a lockdown and, you know, the whole COVID thing. I didn't know all of that stuff was going to happen. So when I went to go visit my family, I was thinking, you know, maybe if I asked him for a divorce, he knew that we weren't getting along. He would just probably give it to me. And if I was persistent, he would just give me the divorce. And I could just do my idda and, you know, and stay in London. I wouldn't need to, like, move back to where I was living. Yeah, so he was just saying the same thing. He was like, no, I'm not going to give you the divorce. If you need to, go get a khula. And I said to him, I don't feel that that's something that I should do, because, again, you didn't, like, you didn't fulfill my rights when you married me. You didn't pay me the mahar that you said you were going to pay. You paid a little bit, but you needed that money again, so I had to pay you that money back. I told him, I said, look, if I was to get a khula, you wouldn't, you know, I would kind of be kind of like just, I was just kind of let you off. What about all the things that you've done to me? And, you know, he's like, I don't care. So what I ended up doing was, I thought I'll go back to Manchester and just hand in my notice to my workplace and do it the right way. If I, you know, I probably would need to get a khula then, you know, because it seems that, you know, I want the divorce more than him. So I ended up going back to where we're living and to be with him. And I was struggling to be intimate with him. I feel like just emotionally I was just detached, and, you know, I didn't want to be near him, you know, because of all the stuff that he said to me. It was really hard for me to, you know, go near him. And he wanted, like, his intimate needs met and tried to come close to me and things. But I say to him, look, I genuinely don't want to do these things with you anymore. And he would make me feel abnormal for those things. He would say, he would call me names. Lockdown was just about to happen, and, you know, there was all these rules in place, you know, you need to wear a mask. And he just became super paranoid around me. Like, we need to get shopping done for the house, and I'll tell him, like, I need to go to, you know, the supermarket. And he'll say to me, oh, you know, make sure you wear a mask. At the time, I didn't feel comfortable wearing a mask. It was just all these new rules. And I just said, look, I'll just wear the gloves, and it's not required for me to wear a mask and things. Because at the time, there was not that requirement. And he would say things like, oh, you know, if you come back with COVID and I catch it, watch what happens to you. He would make big threats like that and, you know, call me really horrible names. And that's when I felt like I had enough. I told him, look, I don't want to be in this marriage anymore. You need to give me a divorce. He saw me crying. You know, I was telling him, like, I'm really not happy. it came to a point where I just had a mental breakdown. Like, you know, I was telling him I'm suicidal and, you know, I just want to move back in with my family. I just want to go back to my family's home. I don't want to be here. And then, yeah, he was not like, he was like, no, look, we'll make it work. He was kind of being empathetic that time and trying to see if I could agree with him. And he was like, no, you know, we'll make it work and, you know, I'll change or something. He was saying like that. And I was just not agreeing with him. And I just told him, like, I was like, look, you know, if you don't give me a divorce, I'll just kill myself. So when he heard that, he took it seriously and he said, okay, I'll divorce you. And then he said, I divorce you. And, you know, the rule is that, you know, the guy says it three times. And when he says it three times, you're divorced, the female is divorced. So when he had said it three times, I didn't hear him. He was like, oh, I said it. Say what? Like, what did you say? I didn't hear you. He's like, I said I divorced you. You know, you this. He called me something really horrible. He said it in our language, but it just means you stupid bitch. I was a bit shocked by what he said, and I was like, oh my God, he finally said it. And I was, all of it was just a shock to me. And then it looked like he was so angry. He was in full rage and he was like, what did you just make me say? You stupid this, you stupid that. And then like he literally came to hit me, and I had to run into the kitchen and I shut the door, and he was pushing the door, like kicking it and trying his hardest to just basically push through the door to hit me. So I was doing my utmost best to just hold the door and not let him come through. And I was just thinking, what do I do now? I was so scared and like so worried that he might come to attack me. So I called my sister-in-law and I told her, like, this is what's happening. She was like, okay, what should I do? Like, there was all these lockdown rules, you know, we're not allowed to travel unless it was a necessity. So she was like, she was saying to send my brother. She was like, if your brother doesn't go, I'll send my, she'll send her brother. Because my brother, his job, shift or something, I think he didn't have, a day off that day. So she was like, oh, maybe it's better if I send my brother, because if I send your brother, he'll probably start a fight with your husband. So I was like, okay, whatever you can do, just like, I don't feel safe here. I don't feel safe to be with him anymore. I feel like he's gonna, you know, attack me. And he was still like banging the door, the kitchen door. He was still saying stuff. I kind of regained my senses. I was just like, okay, maybe I did the wrong thing. Maybe I got him to like tell him, maybe I told him to say, you know, to divorce me. But it was just not, he wasn't willing to do it. So maybe it's not right that he said it like that. I then messaged him saying like, oh, I don't know what I did. I don't know what I got you to do. And he goes, oh, now you got me to do it. So stay well away from me. You're not my wife anymore. If you come anywhere near me, watch what happens to you. Ramadan was about to come. So I didn't know how to make it work with him. I was emailing some like imams and some sheikhs that I came across from the local mosque, but they weren't, you know, they didn't read it at the time. So I was just trying to do my research online to see if, you know, like if it's possible to make it work, because I felt like I made a big mistake getting him to say that he should divorce me. Though I wanted the divorce, it kind of didn't make sense to me at the time. Like I felt like I did it out of emotions. I told him to say it to me out of emotions. We could have done it the right way. We could have, you know, got a mediator involved and then sorted things out. And then, you know, if we needed to divorce, we could have divorced like that. But it was just so overwhelming, and I think I told my dad then, at the time I told my dad what happened. My dad was like, he was understanding of why I wanted the divorce, but he knew that the way we did it wasn't the right way. So he didn't tell me what to do, but he said we are, like he said, we're, you know, he's there for me. And, you know, if I needed him to come collect me, I can ask him. And he can, if he want, if I wanted, he could speak to my husband. But I said to him, I was like, you know, he doesn't want to talk to you. He doesn't talk to anybody. He doesn't want to talk to me.
Season 1 of this podcast is sponsored by Muslim Marriage Services, also known as MMS. If you are looking for marriage, then join MMS, your trusted platform for finding a life partner within the Muslim community. What makes MMS unique? They are not just a matrimony platform. They are proud to be recognized as the world's only certified social enterprise Muslim matrimonial brand. This means that 50% of their profits are reinvested or donated to make a positive social impact. As you explore their features focused on digital security and compatibility, know that your journey with MMS contributes to something beyond matrimony. For further details, please visit www.muslimmarriage.global.
When I realized that, you know, he's not, it's this sort of relationship that I don't want to be in anymore, I felt content. I was happy that he had divorced me. We needed to stay together because, you know, the lockdown rules, and I wasn't sure if I was allowed to travel back. Yeah, we got through Ramadan, and then he was trying to talk to me, and this time he was trying to talk to me without messaging. So we were communicating via text. So this time he was like trying to talk to me face to face, and I was just like kind of being a bit distant. I was saying to him, I don't want to talk to him, and I'm scared, and you know, I'm not sure what he's going to do. I said to him, look, I'm scared of you. I don't want to be anywhere near you. And then he said, look, I just want to make it work. I realize I made a big mistake. I realized that I treated you horribly and my actions were wrong and things. I said, well, it's too late, you know, for you to realize that, because I made up my mind and I want to move back in with my family, and I don't want to be in this relationship anymore. He said, look, you know, before you do anything, before you get your family involved or your dad involved, like, you know, let us work through it, or let me tell my family at least, you know, they would want our best interests. I was like, yeah, well, my parents too would want my best interest, and they're not happy that, you know, you treated me that way, and you know, they want me to like move back with them. So he was like, okay, well, like I'm gonna change, you know, I'm gonna be a different person. I'm not gonna treat you like that anymore. I'm gonna get the right treatment for my infertility. You know, I'm gonna look at the, you know, the route that you found and stuff like that. So this time he was really he sounded really remorseful, and you know, he sounded like he regretted his actions and stuff. But I was like mentally checked out. I was like, no, I don't want to be in this relationship anymore. So I'd like gone to see my family, and I felt a huge relief as well, that he said he divorced me. But what he said to me was that the divorce doesn't count. You know, from his researcher, he said that, you know, he found a fatwa, some Islamic ruling saying that, you know, it doesn't count if the person says it in anger. And if I wanted to do the divorce, if I wanted to get the divorce, I would have to go through like the council, the Sharia council. When he took me back to see my family, he had a conversation with my dad, and he did say he admitted like he didn't treat me right. And then my dad did say to me, it's up to me, it's my choice, because he knew about all of the issues. He knew about the infertility, he knew about him not having the job. I told my family, like, that time I was like, you know, actually I lied to you guys, you know, he didn't have a job. And he was telling my dad that, look, he's made a big mistake and he's going to change. I said, okay, I don't mind giving you another chance. I felt like I really didn't want to, but because he sounded really regretful. I thought, okay, fine, I'll just give him this one chance. I gave him another chance. You know, we tried to live with each other, but what happened was I kept like recalling past events, and I knew that I needed therapy because I wasn't sleeping right. I wasn't like eating well as well at the time. My own understanding and from my own research, I knew that I had symptoms of PTSD. And the professional that I contacted, who told me that my case was severe and that my case was of a domestic abusive, case. She said to me that, you know, there's programs that I could, you know, sign up to that helped women that were in abusive relationships. So I was telling him this as well. I was saying to him, like, I keep having flashbacks. I keep recalling events of how you mistreated me and the things that you'd call me, the gaslighting, you know, the things that you say that, you know, you say that you didn't say when you did say those things. And he was like saying, oh, look, I'm really sorry. Like I behaved that way and I want to make it right. I want to make it up to you. And I want you to give me a final chance where I can make, you know, just be a better person and be the right husband for you. Emotionally, I was just really drained and stuff. So I said, okay, let me just get, maybe therapy would help me. I'd done the program and I just felt like I really resented him. I contacted a mosque near my mom's house. They said I could, apply for a hula. I told him about it, and he was like, look, I'm going to change, though. I told you I'm going to change, and I'm really sorry for how I treated you and how I behaved and things like that. And he said, I'm going to find a sheikh, the mosque that you found, they're fine, but I'd rather speak to a sheikh that I know and, you know, that I trust. He found a sheikh, and I spoke to that sheikh and I told him the story. And I think it came to a surprise for him. Like, you know, he thought maybe the sheikh would tell me to like make it work with him. But the sheikh said that I had every valid reason to want a divorce. And he said he's going to tell my ex-husband to divorce me. So eventually he needed to give me the divorce. And yeah, he divorced me after that.
Thank you for sharing that. It's been 3 years since you've been divorced. Have you been looking for marriage? And what's your search been like as a divorcee?
I have been looking for marriage, yes. I joined, at the time, I think I came across a platform. And that was more like, you know, you didn't need to put your pictures up. You just basically had a profile. And whoever took an interest from that, you know, they can reach out to your willy. So I joined that platform, and I had prospects taking interest, and they contacted my willy, and it was my brother. My brother was my main point of contact. It was my dad. He had some health problems at the time, and also my dad is not fluent in English. So my brother was contacted, and whenever the suitors contact my brother, they would ask about my divorce. They would say, oh, you know, we know that she's divorced, so can you just tell us what happened? And, you know, he would tell them, like, you know, it was she wasn't very compatible and things like that, or, you know, it didn't work out. Because they didn't hear from the horse's mouth, I think they just, I don't know what it was exactly, why they didn't want to continue speaking to me and getting to know me. But I figured that it was because it made me seem like I would just be one of those people where, you know, I'd kind of divorce over something minor.
Do you feel being divorced has impacted your search for marriage now?
Yeah, it has. It has to some extent. But then at the same time, I have come across suitors who were, you know, like very willing to marry me, and, you know, it didn't work out for some other issues. But it's not always my divorce story that puts them off. It's the fact that they think that I might bring emotional baggage and stuff. So I think that's the fear that they have, that, you know, they were to marry me.
Generally speaking, there's two types of people looking for marriage. So you've got the first, a single, never been married, and the second, the one that's divorced. Do you think both are on a level playing field when looking for marriage, or do you think one has an edge over the other?
No, not really. Because I think I see everyone as a unique individual, and everyone's life experience and divorce story is unique and different. So I guess it's how you present yourself and how you speak about it with that potential suitor, who might even like question you about your divorce and why, you know, you got a divorce. But I do believe to some extent as well that, you know, being divorced can like give you less options.
Muslims these days, whether they're divorced or whether they're single, never been married, they're all finding it difficult to get married. Why do you think that's the case? What's your opinion on that?
I think people, they think that, you know, it appears that, you know, you have a lot of options and you can be picky, you can be fussy over who you want to go for. So if you see somebody who's a divorcee, oh yeah, you can immediately X because, you know, like you can find somebody who's never been married and you probably would think that they don't have, they don't have baggage. So I think people are just making it hard for themselves. Sometimes I can understand why people have certain preferences, but sometimes I think people's expectations are just unrealistic, and you know, they have these standards that can't really be met.
Last two segments left. We're going to do a rapid fire round with you. You got to answer the question within 3 seconds and just say whatever comes to mind. So you ready for this?
Yeah.
Okay. Tall guy or extra large guy?
Okay, tall guy.
Rich guy who you don't find attractive or poor guy who you find very attractive?
Poor guy who I find very attractive.
Living with in-laws or living independently?
Living independently.
Looks or character?
Character.
Very wealthy guy with mediocre level of deen or financially average guy with amazing deen?
Financial average guy.
Educated guy or very successful guy?
Educated.
One thing you really want but you could compromise on for the right person?
I'd be willing to compromise on ethnicity and height.
One regret in life?
No, I don't have any regret. I don't think I have any regrets from my loss, you know, from the experience of marriage. I think I wish I was just more honest and told, like, close family and friends more about what was going on, more honest with myself and things like that. Yeah.
Okay. Biggest achievement to date?
Biggest achievement? That, you know, I worked on myself and, you know, I'm continuing to, you know, work on myself and, you know, I've started a business and I'm hoping to, like, make courses around, you know, how to have successful relationships, inshallah.
Okay, and your biggest dream?
To be married, have a family and... yeah, just live somewhere really sunny and warm.
Okay, great. All right, so now we're going to do a profile with you, Aisha, okay? So I'm going to ask you 5 questions, very simple questions, and then I'm going to ask you what you're looking for in terms of the same questions I ask you. So what's your age?
30.
Your height?
5'2".
Your location?
London.
Ethnicity?
Bangladeshi.
Occupation?
Language teacher.
And in terms of what you're looking for, what's your preference for age range?
From age 30 to 42.
Your height preference?
Over 5'9".
Location preference?
I don't have a location preference.
Ethnicity preference?
I don't have an ethnicity preference.
Occupation preference?
I don't have an occupation preference.
If you fit the criteria of the guest today, and if you are interested in considering the guest for marriage, then please email us the following details. your name, age, location, height, occupation, ethnicity, marital status, family contact name and details. Our email address is divorcedmuslims@gmail.com. Remember the golden rule. Only family details will be exchanged. If we have no family details, then the request will be ignored. Well, Sister Aisha, thank you very much for being part of the show. Thank you for sharing your story with us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me on the show.
Season 1 of this podcast is sponsored by Muslim Marriage Services, also known as MMS. If you are looking for marriage, then join MMS, your trusted platform for finding a life partner within the Muslim community. What makes MMS unique? They are not just a matrimony platform. They are proud to be recognized as the world's only certified social enterprise Muslim matrimonial brand. This means that 50% of their profits are reinvested or donated to make a positive social impact. As you explore their features focused on digital security and compatibility, know that your journey with MMS contributes to something beyond matrimony. For further details, please visit www.muslimmarriage.global.